Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. We are going to talk today with a new friend of mine that I met through some of our church planning families. Her name is Melissa Nichols. Melissa is the lead therapist at the Family Attachment and Counseling Center in Minnesota. So, Melissa, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, man, it's just
talk with you today.
Oh, it's our privilege. Melissa, I know that your specialty is working with children and adolescents who suffer complex trauma. But would you just share with us kind of who you are and what your role is at the Family Attachment Center?
Sure. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and my husband and I own Family Attachment and Counseling Center. He's a PhD psychologist, clinical psychologist, and actually the center was founded by my mother, who is a psychologist as well.
Oh my goodness!
And
it
so
just runs
we have
in
a
the
whole
family.
Family of psychologists. Yes, but in her day, she was one of the few child adolescent psychologists in Minnesota, and so. As she worked, she began to specialize in trauma. And 1 year she called us, and we were living in Texas. We weren't living in Minnesota. And we had a background in serving, but she called us and just said, would you ever consider getting trained and coming and working with me?
Wow.
And I just want you to pray about that. And so we did, and we really felt that God had called us to do that. So, interestingly enough, we moved to Minnesota, and then we were trained in counseling and psychology. And so I've worked the past 25 years here at Family Attachment Center with children who suffer complex trauma. And so that's really abandonment, neglect, and abuse, and not a single incident, but
right.
Continual trauma. And so that's really the specialty of our center. And so everyone here is faith-based because we are a Christian center. And our whole mission really is to help these people that are help children and their families who are really struggling from the aftermath of trauma. And so we do that in a variety of ways. When we work with a child of trauma, it's just so complex.
Yeah, it is.
And so they come with a variety of issues. It's not just their core beliefs about what they think about themselves, others, and the world around them, but it's also that trauma affects their physiology.
Mm.
And so we see sensory processing issues. We see learning disabilities, problems with cause and effect, is very common, problems with maturity, social maturity particularly, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of opposition because they have a belief that they can't necessarily rely on the caregivers to meet their needs in an effective or nurturing manner because of their past experience. And so it's difficult. So we use a lot of different interventions to be able to try to reach a child because what we feel like is that everybody is given a choice, and you can make choices on many different levels, but if a child doesn't make a choice for their parents, then they're really hard to teach. And so a lot of our interventions are to help them regulate and help them make a choice to be in a family and work with that family.
Yeah, I love that. And I have to tell you that the first statement on your website truly grabs my heart, my attention, because as soon as you go to your website, Melissa, it says, "We believe in the power of relationships." And that is such a powerful truth because, you know, in a healthy world, most children will grow up with a sense of safety. You know, the world's a big place, but I'm supported, I'm loved in it. But as you know, every day with the work you do, that's not the case for children from hard places or from complex trauma. And like you said, it's many layers. The relationships and their caregivers that they were supposed to be able to trust crumbled, and they weren't, you know, they just weren't reliable. And many times those people were terrifying or painful, you know. So their ability to trust has been severely damaged. And I just love that you all teach that what was broken in relationship can be healed in relationship. So how are you able to help parents, children, teens that you work with kind of move toward this healing?
Well, we have several different programs, but one of our core programs is called the Attachment Program. And years ago, because I call it the trifecta, but the top three diagnoses that we see in our office, we have more, but these are the top three, are children who have ADHD,
mm-hmm.
attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, either inattentive or combined type, usually a combined type, and then oppositional defiant disorder, and then reactive attachment disorder or an attachment issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't make for great clients because they're not particularly, they're not thrilled to be here.
Exactly.
So we do a lot of different things. We do play, but we also do, we have parents tell stories, because what we find with stories is that children will listen to stories. Mm. Adults will listen to stories. And stories, actually, there's a lot of research on stories. Stories have the ability to encode differently than if you just delivered that message directly.
Wow.
And if you think about like a church service or a sermon or a talk, usually people are telling a story, and then the points are embedded in that story. And people don't remember the points right away, but they remember the story, and then they remember the points.
That's so true.
People's
so true.
Narrative memory is very high. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jesus had it right. I mean, parables are the way to go. So in a sense, what people are telling is they're telling stories to their children to make sense of the world and to poke a hole in their mistaken beliefs so that they could offer an alternative, and perhaps that child will take that. So over the years, we've developed this type of narrative therapy called family attachment narrative therapy, and there are four different types of narratives that parents tell their child stories during our intensive program. The first type is a claiming narrative. So the claiming narrative would be something like, you weren't born to me, but I wish you had been with me from mm-hmm. the very beginning. And if you had, this is what your life would look like.
Wow.
And so they tell all these stories about care and celebration and things that people take for granted growing up in healthy homes, but in homes of deprivation.
Yeah.
These kids don't know about this stuff. So they don't know that maybe all their milestones would have been celebrated,
uh-huh.
or that their parents would have made sure that things were safe and gates were put up so that they weren't going to get hurt, or that they would play little baby games with them, or that food would be always readily available. Or, you know, it just goes on and on. Or that you would prepare somebody's room for them before they actually came. Things like that can really create an idea of, oh my goodness, this is what healthy family looks like.
Mm.
I would have been celebrated.
Yeah.
And not that I'm a burden, which is a common misbelief of many of the kids that I see. So that would be the first type of narrative.
So I just share that with my teenager, or I just say we got a child older. I just kind of begin to make up what it would look like had they been in my home as an infant?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it would be, and we work all the way from you know, our intensive program goes from age 3 to 21. So we have big kids here, and you think, oh my goodness, they're too big, but no, they're not. Right. I've had kids. I had one year, I had like 18-year-olds on my caseload. That was, I felt like I saw, that's all I saw.
Yeah.
And we would do the intensive work with them, and they loved it.
Really?
They loved the claiming narratives. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is fascinating work. Fascinating.
The second type, I'll tell you just about the other three stories. The second type is a developmental narrative. And so many of the children that we see, even though they might be chronologically 12, 15, emotionally, they fall into the preschool or early elementary emotional level. And so, you know, the big question here is, like, how do you grow up a kid? And what we have found is that if they feel, if you can kind of fill them up in the levels that they lack, they'll make progress and they'll grow up.
Oh, I love
that.
But
they don't necessarily know what normal is. And so the developmental narrative is just kind of going off of the claiming, but bringing a child up through the ages so that they have an understanding of what normal is. Like, it's normal for a 2-year-old to throw a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And how would a good parent handle that?
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of times in neglect, what we'll see is that, or dysfunctional families, is that when the child gets to a place where they're starting to have some autonomy, that's when they are more subject to abuse.
Mm.
And so parents can introduce through these narratives what good correction looks like, or discipline. And why parents discipline. They discipline out of protection. And that no is really a love word instead of, sure, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So there can be a lot of corrective things there.
So when you were working with your 18-year-olds and you're using this developmental narrative, if you have one that kind of, mm-hmm. you know, you're working with one, and they do something that's more like a 5-year-old. So you just address it as if they were 5 in that moment?
Well, in the narratives, what would happen is they wouldn't necessarily regress, but they might talk. Like an 18-year-old, I remember she was talking to me, and she said, I was a bad baby. And I said, why were you a bad baby? And she said, well, because I cried.
Oh.
And I said, well, that's normal.
Right.
That's really normal. That's developmental. And then so her mother was able to talk then about how babies let their caregiver know that they need something and that this is normal. And that if she had been with her from the very beginning, she would have been able to cry and she would have been right there.
Yeah.
And she would have figured out what was wrong, because this is how you get it. This is normal to be able to ask for help and get it.
Right.
That's normal. But for this child who was 18, she never asked for help.
Right. Yeah.
Because she felt she had to do it all on her own. Mm-hmm. So putting it in a developmental context, they were able to open up a whole area of belief that she they couldn't get to otherwise. So,
oh, that is just so fascinating, and it really brings it down to just the, you know, the basic bones there, that when, you know, I can talk to my child that way, you know, even as a teenager or young adult, like, talk them through that. I don't need a lot of training to be able to do that. This is so encouraging, Melissa.
Yeah, and that is the whole purpose of our program, is to be able to teach parents how to do it, so that they walk away, because we're more like coaches here than
right.
we are necessarily doing this. We do other things that you need to have that therapeutic background. But for the stories, the whole purpose is that they have another tool to be able to use with their children. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's imperative in parenting. We need all the tools we can get. But this conversational approach of just talking with a child, getting to the heart of the issue that I wished I had been there. You almost grieve together that lost time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Absolutely.
So it's a claiming narrative, developmental narrative, and so the next one is what?
A trauma narrative. Wow. And so the trauma narrative changes perspective a little bit. Usually it's a third-person story. It's like maybe about another little girl or boy just like your child, or maybe like I just did some coaching or some consult with some parents just before I began talking with you, but we talked about Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
That they were going to use Winnie the Pooh, everything you didn't know about Winnie the Pooh, to talk to their child about their past. And so when we're looking at post-traumatic stress disorder, one of the hallmark features of trauma, PTSD and complex trauma, is that people have what we call an incoherent narrative. So they have a beginning of their story, they have a middle of their story, but they do not have that ending that gives them peace and calm. And if they don't have that ending, they can't go on with their life. They kind of just replay it in a variety of ways. And so one of the purposes of doing these narratives is to provide them with what we call a coherent narrative. Healthy people have a coherent narrative. They have, you know, and you can see that when people talk about stuff. This is what happened to me, and then this is how happened to me, and this is how I got over it. And that's a coherent narrative. So there's tons of research on this. Incoherent narratives in play of children with trauma and the adult attachment survey, where they're looking at adult incoherent narratives. With people of trauma. And so the purpose of the trauma narrative is to provide that coherent narrative that a child could possibly take and own. And so one aspect of this is to like look at the mistaken beliefs that a person's individual child would have. A pretty typical one would be my birth parents don't love me.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's always a real question. And it's not necessarily that they want relationship with their birth parents, but they have a sense that if I'm loved by my birth parents, then I'm lovable. And so that it just really affects their core view of self. So doing a narrative, a trauma narrative around there would be something like, talking about a woman who, how she grew up, and maybe it would be the birth mother's story,
mm-hmm.
and what she learned and what her beliefs were. And then when she went to have a baby, how she transferred some of those mistaken beliefs to that child. Not intentionally,
right?
But just because she didn't know, and so sometimes looking at that from that lens, a child is able to kind of realize that my birth mother loved me, but she didn't have the skills to take care of me, and then that's the beginning of forgiveness.
Yes,
really, to be able to step into her shoes and realize, okay, this isn't really about me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the trauma narrative might look like in the beginning, and then progressing to parallel the child's experiences that carry with it beliefs about himself or herself, the world, and others, and then eventually having a resolution to that trauma narrative.
That is just so fascinating. I remember sitting with a young adult one time, and they had come over to talk to me about this certain college, and this person was from a background of neglect and trauma and had been adopted out of an orphanage years ago. But we were sitting there talking, and she just wanted input on my view of this certain Christian university. And so I was trying to lay out a kind of a flow chart, if you will, of their studies, you know, and bringing into mind this relationship they were in. So I was trying to merge the two, Melissa, between, okay, here's what it will look like for you to finish in 4 years, and here are some career paths with it, you know, and I'm writing all this down, like I'm a visual learner, so I'm just writing all this down with them and keeping in mind the relationship goal. And I couldn't get this person past like second semester. Like, as you were saying earlier, they couldn't see an ending, a peace and calm or a hope at mm-hmm. the end. Like, they couldn't understand, oh, there could be a great path for me, or I do have hope for a loving relationship and a bright future. Does that make sense? I could see yeah. we had just hit a roadblock there. So I fully understand what you're saying and how important this is to walk along our loved ones, you know, the young adults and children the Lord puts in our lives, to walk them through this. But I'll never forget, Melissa, that moment, seeing they could not see a hopeful future.
Well, yeah, and that is the hallmark trait of trauma, is that the ability to kind of see in the future and visualize yourself in the future, a good future, mm-hmm. is very, very hard.
Yeah.
That gets crushed because people are just on survival mode.
Right.
And so they're not thinking, you know, when you're on survival mode, you're not thinking what you're going to plan for dinner.
Right.
You're just getting through the moment.
Yeah.
So the fact that that person could plan at least to 2 semesters, that yeah. sometimes that's not even possible yeah. for some of the kids that I see.
Well, I fully understand that the trauma narrative, that is just such a great reminder and just training that we all need. I'm loving this. I'm just hanging on every word with you today.
Well, I'll talk just briefly, too, about the fourth narrative. So the fourth narrative is called the successful child narrative. And when we work with the kids here, they all have usually been to, most of the kids have heard years and years about their poor behavior.
Mm.
And they've usually been involved in several different therapies prior to coming to mm-hmm. our clinic. So we save behavioral stuff for last. Because if we talk about behavior on the front end, many times we will lose them.
Yes.
And so the successful child narrative is really talking about more behavioral or logistical issues. So usually it's a third person story, and a lot of times it will be the same character that somebody's established in the trauma narrative that kind of continues on. So there's a whole context to this story. So you understand that this story, you know, whether it's a boy just like the child that a person has, or another character, you understand the context. So this context of coming from a tough background and really struggling. And so the successful child narrative would be kind of the how-tos. So it might be, you know, Timmy the turtle struggled and had all these issues. So when it came to making friends, he really had a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
And so he didn't know how to do it. So the story might be about how could he make a friend,
uh-huh.
and how could he keep a friend? What would be the ingredients that he would have to learn? And so the story, somebody might tell the story, and he will fail at different parts in the story, but he will be able to overcome it eventually. So that would be kind of a successful child narrative. Sometimes we do coping strategies that parents will incorporate, like how to calm down
mm-hmm.
if they're angry. Or I've even had kids who with really low IQs that had trouble like washing their face and brushing their teeth. And so they will use those kind of narratives to be able to explain to them how that would be done. That's more kind of behavioral, logistical things in life, that last narrative.
And so those with teenagers as well, you're able to find stories like that or just kind of do a third-person narrative with them, a third-person story to kind of help a teenager engage that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And it can even be, sometimes with teenagers, it can be really helpful to talk about a parent's personal story.
Oh, yeah.
About a similar situation. Because you just need to give them a roadmap of how they could act differently.
Yeah.
So, and some of those personal stories that I've heard from parents have been the most powerful for kids. I had one gal years ago. We had planned a story. I thought she was going to go in a direction, and she got into the session and decided to change it. And I had enough, you know, wherewithal just not to interrupt her and say, hey, you know, weren't we supposed to do this? but she told the most beautiful story to her son. And he was a tough kid. He was, he would pee on his blanket or his pillow. He would take it apart and stuff it down the vents. I mean, he preferred to sleep in the bathtub rather than a bed.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, he had just really difficult, odd behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And he came from significant neglect and abuse.
Right.
And so, And I knew a little bit about this mother's background, but I didn't know a lot. She hadn't necessarily explained a lot of her background. We do a parenting intake when people come through our intensive programs. So we have an idea about where the parent models are coming from, but she hadn't filled hers out very thoroughly. But she decided during that particular session that she was going to talk about herself.
Mm.
And so she talked about being raised in a really abusive home, and that her mother, to protect her from her stepfather, would send her across these fields, because she lived rurally, to an old woman's house. And just say, you're going to go over and help this woman today. That's what you're going to do. So she would help her in her garden, or she'd help clean her house, or she would help do different things. And one day that woman turned to her and she said, are you important enough to be good?
Wow.
And she said it was, she'd just never been asked that question. That was an amazing question. And she finally said, yeah, I am.
Right.
And she talked about how that decision changed her, and how, because she felt she was important enough to be good, she began to work harder in school, and she went from being a very poor student to a very good student. And she worked on her friendships. And she learned how to be able to make friends and keep friends, and to forgive. And she went on and on about how that particular decision changed her life.
Wow.
And then at the end of this session, she turned to her child and she said, are you important enough to be good? And he said, yes,
oh.
I am. And what was really remarkable is he was in a specialized school for kids that were highly violent. And he was below grade level. But in that year, the following year, he worked and he was above grade level at the end of the year, he was mainstreaming into regular classes instead of being in isolation. And I mean, it was an amazing journey and progress for that kid because he had made a choice just like his mother had.
Mm-hmm. Well, the power of that relationship with his mom and her being able to connect with him, you know, and like you say, mm-hmm. I love what you said, you know, you don't start with the behaviors, you end with those because it's not the behavior, it's what's going on behind the behavior, right? And the moment that son was able to say, I am worthy, the Lord made me, you know, he began to, that was patterned before him, then I am worth being loved. What a game changer in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly.
Oh, that is great. Yeah, healing relationships truly do rewire and redirect. But just the claiming narrative, that developmental narrative, trauma narrative, and that successful child narrative, like, you know, talking about, I guess, in that step forward, the talking about behaviors and then sharing some of our stories with our kids. These are powerful tools.
Well, they are, and they're very natural.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about oral traditions, you think about just the Bible, about stories.
Yeah.
And if you change your story, you can change your life.
Absolutely. If you change your story, you can change your life. Yeah, I just think of Jesus walking with the disciples, you know, all those days, Melissa, and he just trained them with stories and showing up and having meals together and doing relationship together. But it was just parable after parable after parable. And that is such a great reminder to us on, you know, parenting kids from hard places. Thank you so much for your time today. And so if we want more information about the Family Attachment and Counseling Center, where can we go?
You can go on our website. It's just www.familyattachment.com. We're located in Chaska, Minnesota, and we can connect you with a therapist to be able to talk and see if this is a good fit for you.
Oh, it sounds like it'd be a wonderful fit for most of us. So thank you, Melissa. I'd love to have you back sometime. You have so much to share, and I just love your gentle nature approach and your kindness. And so thank you so much for sharing today.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, friends, thanks for joining us today. I hope that this conversation with Melissa Nichols has given you great hope and tools, as it has me, because there is a great deep capacity for healing, growth, and restored relationships. So don't let anything, anyone, or any behavior or sin sabotage the relationship with your child or your teen, your young adult. I'm on this journey with you. I'm fighting for it alongside you. So continue to work toward a strong relationship with your child. Cover it in prayer and continue to learn new tools. Because, you know, as Peter wrote to us, and he knew what it was to suffer a broken relationship in his life, and he wrote, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ."